Okay, let's get right back to our special guest, Frank Chile, as George Filer and I continue. Okay, Frank, so Frank Stranges, Stranges, was that a real name?
That's his name. It's That's actually an amazing Italian name. He was born in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Strange is how it would be pronounced in Italian, Strange.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
And they call it Stranges.
All right, so anyway, this strange woman came up to him and said, the man in the pictures you've been showing wants to meet with you at the Pentagon.
Yes.
And Frank said, I can't get
that.
She happened
to have FBI credentials. So she was with the FBI.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I will pick you up tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and I will take you to meet the individual who you're showing the photo of.
Okay.
She didn't call him by name. She just said, the individual in the photograph that you're showing people. So she picked him up at 8 o'clock, and he didn't have any security. She had a security badge that she wore around her neck, and it was like over her right breast. So he said, I don't have any security clearance. She said, you do exactly what I do when we go through the security checkpoint. You won't have any issues. So when she passed through the first checkpoint, she opened up her coat and showed the right side of her dress, which was where her security clearance was.
Uh-huh.
And she walked through, and then he opened his jacket. He didn't have anything there, and they waved him through. And he couldn't believe it. And she says, you got two more to go through. So they went through two more, and she brought him to the inner ring of the Pentagon, and they were up by the double wood door, and she said, the person who wants to meet you is in there. And he opens the door, and he says to her, are you coming in? She says, no, I was not asked. He goes inside, and on the right-hand side are the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And across the room, Jack,
all of them,
is a bank of windows. A bank of windows looking out into the courtyard of the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a person standing there wearing a suit, and he turns around and starts walking to Dr. Frank and extends his hand. He says, Dr. Stranges, it's very nice to meet you. And he said, my name is Valiant Thor. So he shook hands with him, and he looked down, and he noticed that this person didn't have any palm prints or any fingerprints. And
totally
he thought to himself,
mm-hmm.
"For smooth as a baby." He said, mm-hmm. "Smooth as a baby."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "How come you don't have any marks on your hands?" And Valiant said to him, "Palm prints and fingerprints are the mark of mankind. We do not have that."
Mm.
And Dr. Strange said, "What do you mean you don't have that?" And he said, "We ever stopped walking with the Lord." And
he said, "What?"
That really. He said, we never stopped walking with the Lord. And it completely took Dr. Strange by surprise.
Stopped walking with the Lord. Right.
So that began a relationship that Dr. Strange had with Valiant Thor. Valiant landed in Alexandria, Virginia in 1957. I believe it was in February of 57. And was a guest at the Pentagon for 3 years until 1960. And he offered to bring solutions for overcoming disease and poverty and bringing ideas for agriculture, for more efficient engineering of devices to work in harmony with
liberated the world from the hands of the moguls and ghouls who run it, and the petroleum stranglehold and all the rest of it. He wanted to turn us loose into reality.
Yep.
And he was a guest of the Pentagon for 3 years. Does that mean he was staying in the Pentagon?
He was staying in the Pentagon, and he would tell Dr. Stranges, he said it was so funny, they would put him in his quarters, and they would lock the door, but he had the ability of being able to get out.
Oh, yeah.
So they could never contain him. They couldn't contain him. And he told Dr. Stranges that every time he tried to talk to them about the benefits that they were bringing as gifts for mankind here, all they wanted to know was how his ship operated, how his suit was able to repel laser beams, and how it was able
to repel. They want military use. It's all military.
Yeah.
Military
so
first.
So he told Dr. Stranges that he was here for a four-phase program. The first phase was to contact all world leaders, let them know of the existence of beings from other planets here,
so
they would come forward and announce us. Well, that failed. The second phase was approaching religious leaders from all the world religions and introducing themselves to them. And Dr. Strange said, Val, what did they say about that? And he said, they basically said, you paddle your canoe, we'll paddle ours. third phase, that's interesting, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
The third phase was to contact all of the universities and colleges of of merit and worth, and introduce themselves and ask them to come forward with this information. And then we'll move forward with it. So the fourth phase, and what they've been involved in ever since, is a grassroots movement to raise public awareness and public consciousness, mm-hmm. because it's not coming through official channels.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Strangis was interacting with Thoreau at the time he passed away in 1998. However, in 1999, an interesting thing occurred. When I lived in Southern California, I got a chance to visit with Dr. Strangis, and he shared some remarkable stories, him and his wife, with
me. Well, this was in his book, what you just related to us.
Yes, yes. And it's also going to be shown in a film. I met a film producer by the name of Craig Campobasso, uh-huh. who befriended Dr. Strangis. He's a director, and he befriended Dr. Strangis for the last 9 years of his life, and they became fast friends.
Oh, wow.
And Dr. Strangis always wanted to have the Valiant Thor story told, The Stranger at the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And this Craig Campobasso, who worked on Dune, the Frank Herbert film Dune,
mm-hmm.
he
mm-hmm.
directed Sky Captain and The World of Tomorrow. He worked on Total Recall. He worked on Tremors. He worked doing some of the special effects work on Avatar. He is making a film, and it was shown at the Burbank Film Festival last week, a short version of the full release that he wants to create, a full 2-hour motion picture. He's done a short version of it that's about a half hour. He presented it at the Burbank Film Festival this week and won official selection of the festival. And it's called The Stranger at the Pentagon. There are clips of it available on Craig's website.
Hmm.
The website is thestrangeratthepentagon.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's stills, there's photographs, and there's clips of it and information about the story. And he's hoping that this will be well enough received that he could do a full-blown 2-hour film based upon the life of Valiant Thor.
A theatrical film, not a TV movie.
Not a TV movie, full-blown.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a great script, a great idea, great storyline, sure.
Yep.
It reminds me of a little bit of The Day the Earth Stood Still. There's some parallels there.
There certainly are.
George, what do you have to say about that? Go ahead, Frank, and then we'll get George to weigh in on this.
Well, I want to share something else with you that's mm-hmm. not generally known. I happened to meet a woman who had a meeting with Valiant Thor.
Hmm.
She lives in Montana.
Wow.
Her name is Judy, and she happened to meet, her parents were very much active in the UFO conventions were held out at Giant Rock Airport in Mojave
mm-hmm.
during the 50s, and she
sure.
met the three Georges, George Williamson, George Van Tassel, and George Adamski. And she said that, as you know, George Hunt Williamson had come up with a way of contacting our so-called space friends via ham radio. And she was invited to go to a presentation of George Hunt Williamson doing this, and her mother and father were there and several other people, and she went to this hall where it was going to be conducted, and she walks in, and she said there were three men off to the left of her.
Uh-huh.
She said two men were facing her, one had his back to her, and he was talking about Venus, and he turned around and looked at her and walked over to her, and he said, "At one time, you were from Venus." And she said she recognized him as the person in the photograph, Valiant Thor.
Uh-huh.
And she said he looks more handsome than the photographs that were taken by August C. Roberts. She said she shook his hand, and she could see that there was no palm print, there was no fingerprints. She said there was an aroma that came off of his body. She said it was like a sweetness smell to kind of like, she thought it was kind of to overcome some of the smells here on Earth. She said she felt that was emanating from his body. And she said he was there to introduce George Hunt Williamson and his radio contact with the space beings. And she said she's never forgotten that experience. She was about 19 years of age, and this occurred in the early 60s. And she said that's burned into her mind. She said, he is real. He exists.
Now, she's still alive?
She's still alive.
Can we get her? Or does she want to take this with her?
It's interesting to have her on. She's got a lot of interesting stories to share, Jeff.
Well,
I can certainly try to coordinate that for you.
Please do, and tell her she'll be treated with the utmost respect here, as you know. And we have, I think, the most intelligent audience in talk radio, period. They'll be all ears. They don't pass judgment. They listen carefully to everything that's said. That would be something that if she would share, she would be doing obviously a great service to all of us and herself too, I think. I just can't imagine
very open to it, Beth.
Taking that with me, so to speak, you know? It's too big, too important.
Yes.
This is an amazing story. George Filer, what do you have to say at this point?
Well, I met Dr. Strange, and he seemed to be a very wonderful man. One thing I'd like to point out is that, you know, the listeners don't really know who we are, so to speak. That, for example, I was vice president of Med Corps. I have a master's degree. I was a major in the Air Force. But people don't know that Frank is also the president of a company.
Yeah.
A very important company that...
I want to talk about that with him in just a minute, so go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'll let him talk about it. My point is that we're not flakes, that we're...
No, you're
we can go out
Americans.
In industry and give these kind of presentations in
correct.
Front of
yeah.
many other people and be respected in those fields
sure.
as well.
Well, your people here know you very well, George, and they know that. And, frankly, let's talk about your business for a minute here, because this is something that's fascinating. I've always admired people who are able to invent something new that works, that saves lives, that makes sense. And your family has done something like that. Tell us about it.
My
give us the name
did.
Of your... Yeah.
Sure.
Give us
he
the name
created
of the
product.
Yeah.
He created a product which we call Clear Drain. And it's
clear, now, go slow.
Technology.
Clear...
Clear Drain. It's spelled CLEARDRAIN.
Okay.
And it's a new technology. It's a new product to protect... air brake systems of trucks and buses and equipment, and prevents moisture and contamination from creating downtime and from creating accidents that could involve fatalities. And our product is so unique, Jeff, we can't sell it to wholesale distributors. We have to sell it direct. It's 100% U.S. made, and it basically lasts for the life of the vehicle. We did a run-to-destruction test, and our product lasts 14 years. And it only weighs 7.2 pounds. It can handle temperatures of minus 100 to plus 185, and it could keep any air system clean, anything from like an emergency vehicle, like an ambulance, all the way up to an oil rig. One of our systems is that sophisticated.
When you say keep it clean, how do these air systems get dirty, and what happens when they do get dirty?
Well, what happens is, a compressor, one of the side effects of compressing air is it generates heat, generates moisture, right. and it generates acids. And what's known as air dryers were designed to basically take care of that, but they're only putting a Band-Aid on the air system because they cause moisture and contamination to get beyond the air dryer, and they cause the compressors to take up with carbon, which causes compressors to have to be replaced. Our product uses the air system as it was designed and functions once every 15 minutes, blowing out moisture and contamination like a sneeze. It just atomizes it so that it doesn't create any dripping or any sensation where there's puddling. And we've been selling our product factory direct, and we're going up against multi-billion-dollar corporations who want to see us go away. And by the grace of God, we're persevering. And, you know, It's not easy, but we get a lot of satisfaction of our clients that will never go back to the old technology.
Okay.
If any of your audience would like to see it, our website is cleardrainusa.com.
Okay, that's real simple. Cleardrainusa.com.
All right.
Now, what I'm interested in is, what is the normal maintenance run on a normal system without Clear Drain? How often do compressors, on average, have to be changed because they gum up and don't work? And what's the cost of that on an average tractor trailer, for example?
Well, we've been told in the solid waste industry they're changing compressors or rebuilding them every 6 months, every 8 months. On buses, every 8 months, every 9 months. And our clients that have used our product have not changed compressors for 10 to 12 years. They remain clean as the day they were made. And the return on investment... we're working with a fleet in New York City right now where we're estimating the savings is $6,000 to $7,000 per vehicle per year.
Wow. That's an astonishing breakthrough. Have you been the target of an attempted friendly or a hostile buyout?
We've been victims of people being paid off not to use our product or to mar the results of our product.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been tested by me, by the U.S. Air Force Material Equipment Evaluation Program,
mm-hmm.
Texas DOT,
mm-hmm.
and some other really remarkable OEMs out there. But, you know, we're swimming up against the tide, but we know we have a product that we could really bring tremendous benefit to people, and we don't want to put it on the shelf. We
okay.
want people to see and enjoy the benefits our technology can bring to them.
ClearDrainUSA.com. Now, if I had a tractor trailer or a small company with 10 or 12 rigs, I'd be into a lot of money every year messing with these compressors. Thousands and
yes.
thousands and thousands of dollars. The cost
and
in round number
contamination.
The cost of clear drain.
It's basically $1,000.
Okay, you'll get that back the first year.
Some of our clients tell us they're getting it back within 30 to 45 days of installation.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, sure. Okay,
freeze ups. The vehicles don't freeze up. Our
when you say freeze up, what do you mean?
The moisture that builds up in the air tanks that are supposed to be taken care of by air dryers, it doesn't get taken care of by air dryers, and it freezes up, and the vehicles cannot run. They cannot pump air through the ice that builds up in it. And some of the vehicles, it's so severe that the seams on the air tanks actually burst because the water expands when it freezes. And even though they have air dryers on them and alcohol evaporators and all kinds of other stuff, they're just Band-Aids. And they're putting on hundreds of pounds of aftermarket to try to prevent these situations. And we prevent it. And our product only weighs 7.2 pounds and has four connections.
7 pounds, four connections.
That's
you can put this on in minutes.
Say in 90 minutes, but most of the folks put them on within 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm. Well, extraordinary. And you see, there is still a better mousetrap out there. That's the amazing thing.
Something that I might point out is that, you know, there's thousands of traffic accidents with trucks. How many are caused by the brakes, we can only estimate. But 5,000 people a year lose their lives to accidents with trucks. And this is a better way to handle the air brake system so they work efficiently.
Yes, the U.S. Air Force in their study, Jeff, said that our product actually enhances air brake system safety.
Well, no doubt, zero. So if I'm a trucker or someone who has air brakes, I go to ClearDrainUSA.com, I study, I ask questions, and I purchase, and that's it.
And we could give you all kinds of referrals.
Right? Oh, I'll bet.
It's working great up in the Arctic Circle and out in the desert.
Yeah, the Sahara Desert, the Amazon rainforest, the Arctic Circle, Siberia, the most extreme temperatures on Earth, and it's a standalone product. All you do is put it on and just let it run. I told George we had one at Scott Air Force Base where they got 17 years out of it before they had any downtime. Basically, it outlasts the vehicle.
Unbelievable. Wow, that's extraordinary. You're going to be approached, you already have, but you will be approached by someone who will want to buy you out. hopefully you resist that, because we know what happens to advanced breakthrough technology that threatens the paradigm. It disappears. It gets warehoused and boxed.
They want
to
put it on the shelf. That's right.
Yeah, sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
wow.
We're resisting, Jeff. We're resisting.
Well, good. They say everybody has a price, but... in this case, I hope you don't. You will take a firm and aggressive share of the market in time if you can get the word out. ClearDrainUSA.com. Well, that's really interesting. Thanks for sharing that. I'm often reminded.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm often reminded of the all the paranoia and concern and talk about carbon emissions from vehicles, and it certainly is bad. China is talking about putting an absolute cap on the amount of carbon that the country as a whole can emit on the planet. That would be encouraging. But there is a way to literally make automobile exhaust gas breathable and safe. And it's done very simply with a corona discharge ozone generator properly placed in the exhaust system of the car. It was put on a fleet of cars in L.A. County and proved 100% successful, and it never went anywhere. They could have cleaned up internal combustion engine exhaust 100% simply by putting this little corona discharge ozone unit in the exhaust system somewhere in that line, and you can breathe the exhaust. And there was clear water that came out, perfectly clean, and that was it.
And no carbon monoxide?
No, cleaned everything. Corona discharge creates ozone, O3. Right. That's O3. O3, well, it's an unstable element. It's oxygen plus one, basically. And in about 20 minutes, the O3 goes back to being O2. Where did that extra atom of oxygen go, the third part? It took off and found something of an organic nature to combine with and basically destroy, which would be your hydrocarbon emissions and everything else. So that's a true story. That story was in the LA Times, and I tried to find it, but it was scrubbed. It's not findable. And I ran it, I read it, and I know about ozone very well, and it is an extraordinary thing. What do you think they put in hotel rooms, folks, if somebody smokes in a hotel room that shouldn't? They put an ozone generator in there, and it breaks down.
Sure.
Breaks down the smoke. Cleans the smoke, breaks down the nicotine smell, and everything else. Same thing in your house.
I've got one that I use in my water.
Well, it's they're used for hot tubs and spas. And if you go to newearth@rents.com, we have one. It's the UV275. It's designed for spas. But boy, will it do water. You can charge up drinking water and powerhouse it with oxygen. Actually, oxygen ozone. And drink it down, and it goes into your bloodstream, and it starts to clean your bloodstream, oxygenate your body. Same thing. They use ozone in Europe in clinics, and people with terrible diseases often lose their disease. It's oxygen therapy. It's like hyperbaric oxygen treatments, far better, far better. Okay, once again, give us the website, Frank.
It's cleargrainusa.com.
Okay, I'll link that to your name, and guests will come right back and talk some more in a few minutes. Hang on. Okay, and we're back here with Frank and George, and really amazing stories. So, Valiant Thor lived in the Pentagon, or pentagram as I sometimes call it, for three years, trying his best to get through to the military mind, which he actually should have known better after the first year, or the first week. It would have been a tough challenge. Didn't work, didn't happen. All they can think about is dominance and hegemony over the rest of the planet, military people, and his technology obviously would have given him that. Now, what happened to Valiant Thor?
Well, I was just going
And I wish Michael Rennie was around to play the role.
Really? You know, I think I may have mentioned this to you before. I read an interview that Robert Wise had done before he had passed away, and he said his proudest achievement as a film director was making the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Absolutely. I wish I had had the man on more. I think I had him on one time for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and a visionary. That was today represents to me, and I've said this to my audience many times, the only hope this planet has, that if another intelligent life form manifests itself in the media, they're here, and says something to the effect that you've got 1 week to disarm, or the planet ceases to exist, or you're all gone, whatever, an ultimatum. There's no logic that applies to this psychotic human behavior of wanting to design weapons of mass destruction and death. It doesn't work. It's not logical. It's not linear thought. It's crazy. It is literally institutionalized, organized insanity.
Jeff, I'll never forget how this. As Michael Rennie, as the space visitor, is about to leave, he said, "Remember, we're watching and waiting."
Well, they're watching, all right, and they're here, and I just hope to heck that somebody, one of them, does something. I'm not optimistic.
Jeff, I have a suggestion, if you may be open to it.
Sure.
If you and what you think would be interested, maybe I could have Craig contact you. You might want to have him on where he could talk of some of the little-known stories of Valiant Thor and Dr. Strange's, which Dr. Strange has shared with him before he passed.
Now, who is Craig?
Craig's the director of the Stranger at the Pentagon movie.
Oh, please.
Yes,
please.
His name is Craig Campobasso.
Well, if you know the man, and you obviously do, invite him and come on with him. George, come on. We'll have an extraordinary conversation. I'd love to hear these things. What bothers me is I missed getting Frank on the program. This program started in 1994, and I had 4 or 5 years, and time flies. And you say, well, I'll get him. I'll get him. I'll get to him. You get overwhelmed with other things, and doggone it, I missed it. But his book is here, and you're here, and that's great. And George met him, so... Okay, we.
I don't know if I ever.
There was no ego there. There was no ego there, Jeff.
I believe you, George. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was saying that you mentioned Michael Rennie. I flew with him, sitting next to him.
Yeah.
From L.A. to Chicago.
Tell us the story about that and what he said about the film.
Well, he said that the government had backed the film and was encouraging them to. You know, put it out. And he was under the impression that there was two groups in the government, one who wanted to bring all the information out and tell the public, and there was another group who felt that that was in error based on some studies that had been made that the people of the Earth, so to speak, weren't ready for it. But they wanted to, you might say, get us used to the idea that we might be visited. And, of course, that's what that movie provided, the idea that we were being visited. And there's other ones, you know, like E.T., the extraterrestrial, and so on. But we've had various movies that bring this out. And according to some friends of mine who put out movies, they're, I don't know if the right word is back, but they're made... They're helped in putting out the information, and they're encouraged and know that they will not lose money on their endeavor. In other words, there is a program by certain groups that wants us to know that we're being visited. And I know we're being visited, and you know it, but that the public at large is not real.
No, and I'll tell you another thing. I think... Maybe you won't agree with me, but if there was official contact made tomorrow in such a way that the government couldn't deny it, I think the public would essentially take it in stride. Unless it was done in such a way as to terrorize the public, then it wouldn't. It would panic. But if it was benign, benevolent, intelligent, and pragmatic, I don't think people would bat an eye. They've been exposed to this stuff since the 50s, big time.
Right, yeah. He, Michael Rennie, personally was very friendly to me. Now, I was in uniform, being in the service.
Yeah.
And that he indicated he had done lots of work with the government, particularly the Air Force, with various films and so on. And he was very clear about that, the government, in a sense, helped. Now, it was probably just one area of the government that helps, but they do that kind of thing.
Oh, they always trade off men and materiel support for a film if the filmmakers play ball with the government agenda. That's just the way it works. And you don't play ball, you don't get it.
I think they encourage people to join up and that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. What, Frank?
I was going to say, Jeff, in the interview with Robert Wise, when the photograph of Michael Rennie was shown to him as being the space visitor,
yes,
he jumped on that right away. He said there was a quality about Michael Rennie. He looked otherworldly.
Oh, he did. Oh, absolutely. It could not have been
really
cast any better.
He said, I couldn't have found a perfect candidate for that role other than Michael Rennie.
Nope, he was it. He was the...
born to make... Play that part.
Yeah. All right.
No, he didn't reveal that to me.
Okay, we have to break here. When we come back, if you would, let's wind up the story of Valiant Thor. And I do hope this is made into a film. I'm really getting tired of Hollywood scripts. We need a good one. This would be a really good one. And tell us what happened in the end to Mr. Thor, if that's what he wants to go by. But we'll find out in a minute. Hold on, gang. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. All right, if you would, tell us what happened to Valiant Thor at the end of his term of stay at the Pentagon. Did he finally just say, good luck, and walk?
No, he continued on that four-pronged rollout of information, with one where they're conducting visits with heads of nations around the world, meeting with religious leaders around the world, then meeting with heads of universities and colleges. And then the fourth phase was trying to raise awareness at the grassroots level. And Dr. Stranges would say that Val would always say he doesn't want the mankind to look at these beings as invaders or as gods, just more aware brothers and sisters that are coming here and asking us to rejoin the cosmic family. Which is quite profound.
Mm-hmm. Too profound for the people he was dealing with. What happened to him? How do we know, or do we know how it wrapped up?
Well, we know that Dr. Strange has maintained contact with him up until the end of his life in 1998, and Val is still working down here. And Craig has not told me this directly, but I think that he's getting some influences behind the scenes to work with getting Val's story out and other information regarding Val's work down here.
Has he met Val?
He has not told me that he has met Val, but he said he has felt a lot of impulses that are guiding him to do things that he's starting to get a lot of reception to regarding getting the story out about the stranger at the Pentagon. And people that he knew from other film projects are willing to work with him to help tell the story. He said there's more of an awareness out in Hollywood, in the Hollywood community, than you would imagine, with getting positive stories about the space visitors out there than the negative ones.
Right. Well, we get a lot. We have a very big audience in the film community out there, and they're aware of it, I'm sure. They don't miss anything. This Val, if you're listening, and you may well be, you're welcome on this program. Just contact me. You'll know how to do it, and we'll have you on anytime you'd like. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting, Jeff.
Yeah, Frank.
I was just going to share with you, in Timothy Good's newest book, Earth and Alien Enterprise,
whose book, please?
Timothy Good.
Tim Good, okay.
Yeah, Tim Good, Earth and Alien Enterprise. Among the revelations in there is he said he has evidence that the Eisenhower administration had 4 meetings with space visitors during the 8 years of his administration, 2 with grays and 2 with ones that look like us. Now, wouldn't it be interesting if one of the ones that look like us happened to be Valiantor?
Could be. Wonder if he's aged like we do. Venus has a similar orbital mechanics and all of that in the solar system. It's similar. That's why it's called our sister planet. And one wonders if they blew it on the surface and had to go underground, if you follow me, like we're doing here. And you don't start out living underground. You have to move there. There's a migration at some point, if the story is accurate.
From what I understand, Jeff, they do not age. And I think the last time that I was on the program, we were talking about Graham Bethune, and Graham got a chance to know Dr. Strange's, and Dr. Strange's told Graham, he said, I want you to come out here. I have something for you. He didn't tell him what it was. So Graham took a plane out to Van Nuys to visit with Dr. Strange's. When he came back, he said, Frank, I got something to show you. He said, Valiant Thor gave this to Dr. Strange's to give to me, and it was a blueprint of his command ship, which is Victor 1, and it was beautiful. The blueprint was beautiful. He showed it to me. He took it out of his briefcase, and he says, what do you think of this? And I thought, what a gift. That Val wanted Dr. Strange to give it to you. It was a gift from Valiant Thor to Command Bethune.
Where is it?
Graham passed away, I guess, maybe 5-6 years ago, George.
Yeah.
All his stuff, the photographs he had extraordinary photographs at Admiral Farney. Oh, gosh.
Admiral Farney.
Yes.
George, we know the same people. So.
Okay. All right. So the artifacts are all collected by the feds and they're the military, and they're in a box somewhere.
Who knows? Admiral Forney had given him a lot of photographs. He had shown me some of them.
Yeah.
Of saucers landing on aircraft carriers and the crash retrieval in Utah, which was 100 feet in diameter, and it took just 4 guys to lift it up.
Yeah, just I remember that story. So you saw the blueprint.
I saw the blueprint, and it was Vic 1, and it could house 100 people on it, and it was just extraordinary. The center part of the ship was the power source, and from what I understand, it would duplicate the gravitational field of the destination where they hope to go to. And what it would do is it would repel them from Earth and draw them to Venus, or repel them from Venus and go to another planet, or go to another galaxy.
And
it was a beautiful blueprint.
So when you say bloop, did it... It would not have looked like a blueprint like we know blueprints. It would look like plans.
No, but it was called the blueprint, but it was just a cross-section of his ship and how it was laid out.
I got it.
And it was beautifully, beautifully done. My gosh.
Well, consider this your program, to use it any way you'd like with these people, any of them. We'll do our best to bring the message forward. Valiant Thor's message.
Definitely contact Craig Campobasso and Judy, and as well as the individual who had the experience in the Air Force. And they want their stories to be told, Jeff.
Well, I'm here. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. And Val, if you're listening, and I suspect you are, please contact me. And if you want to come on, we'll start the ball rolling here. We don't have any time, as you, Val, know better than anyone. We are beyond time here. We're on borrowed time. So if you have a desire still to help this tawdry race and its dying planet, better move. Better move very quickly.
Jeff, doesn't it almost seem at times that we're at the point where we need an off-planet presence to correct things?
Well, that's what I said earlier. I'd view it in terms of an ultimatum. Remember Stranger in a Strange Land, the book. If Val Thor came forward... they would try to kill him unless he was representing their agenda. So he's got to be careful. He's not pro-military, all right? And that's the problem. 3 years in the Pentagon, they couldn't get him to come to their point of view. All they're obsessed with killing people. That's what the military does. No offense, George.
Not the people that I knew.
I know.
It's the Air Force. They're more interested in protecting the country.
Yeah, it's got to stop. Well, the country is not under threat right now. Is Venezuela threatening this country? Is Ukraine threatening this country? Was Libya? Was Iraq? Heck no. So what are we doing? We've killed 5 to 6 million people in the last 10, 12, 14 years in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Middle East, in Libya, and certainly in Syria. We're involved in that in insurgency support capacity. It is said we have special forces on the ground there and in Libya as well, and in Ukraine, for that matter. So Libya's been having trouble. But anyway, we are, unfortunately, in the hands of people who are not Americans, not the Americans that I grew up with. They're representing and certainly in bed with the ultimate occult evil that is running the show. And we need help.
I like to call them the game players, Jeff. I like to call them the game players. They like to play games.
They play their games of death, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, George, anything you want to add? We just have about a minute and a half left here.
Oh, a friend of mine passed away. I'd like to remember him, Captain Robert Durant. Had some 20,000 hours flying both for the Navy and
for commercial airlines,
Pan American, if you remember them, and Delta. But he was a strong advocate of UFOs and had seen them. Worked with the Ingo Swan and remote viewing and saw mining on the moon that actually put out a DVD called Roswell Yes that is worth getting.
If you've been to any of the websites which have put forth videos made from the photographs that the Curiosity rover on Mars has taken...
Right.
Stunning evidence, incontrovertible evidence, intelligent artifacts all over the place.
Ancient Egypt.
yeah, it is. And images of what appear to be grid laid out in a grid fashion, cities right now still there. I would suggest that there are a lot of people there, beings there still, living underground partially, some above ground. It's a whole different game. The inconsistency in the released photographs is embarrassing. Obvious smudges, obvious things taken out. And what's interesting is, though, that we have the same tools, basically, that they have. And so the reverse of obfuscation is being done by a lot of researchers, and they're putting the results out there, and it's pretty amazing. Why?
European Space Agency has better pictures.
Yeah, they do. Ours are grainy sometimes. Sometimes they're crystal clear. So why go to the trouble of doing this unless you've got some kind of a military agenda? And there is one. Don't know what it is, but it's there. Behind all is the International Geophysical Military Cartel. All right, Frank, do you have a final quick comment here?
I just want to thank you once again, Jeff, and I will endeavor to bring some of these other interesting individuals and their stories to your program to share with your audience.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Frank. I appreciate it. You've opened the door, and George, as always, my friend, take care. We'll talk soon. I appreciate this very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. All right, two fine gentlemen. And we'll see what develops and be right here in a few minutes as we bring you hour number 3.